Last time on Culture File, we heard how a Chinese name for fish sauce came to represent the tomato condiment we put on our chips. So you might expect that the names of food have little enough to do with what they represent. Not so, says Dan Jurafsky. There are connections between the sound of food words and the experience of eating, something increasingly exploited by food brands.
Yeah, it seems quite unintuitive, but it turns out that just the way a word sounds can tell you something about its meaning. So linguists call this idea sound symbolism, and the most common kind of sound symbolism has to do with vowels. So there are two kinds of vowels, roughly speaking, in the world. We call them front vowels and back vowels. So a front vowel is made with the tongue more or less in the front of the mouth, and they're the vowels like e, I, e, 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 e. And you can kind of feel the tongue in the front of the mouth if you say them out loud. E, I, e. The back vowels are made with the tongue at the back of the mouth. So oo, aw, aw, oo. And you can feel the kind of roundness and the big cavity in your mouth when you say them. And it turns out that cross-linguistically, front vowels are used to describe small things. So in English, we have itsy bitsy and the word little and a bit and teeny tiny. All of these e's and is are very commonly used for words that turn out to mean small. Even the e at the end of people's names, the Danny or Billy, that same e is used for describing little kids. Again, across languages, the a or u vowel tends to be used for larger things. So in English, you have the word large and huge and humongous. It's not an absolute rule. There's lots of exceptions, but it's a general tendency that you can see in English and across hundreds of languages, even very unrelated languages. But certainly you can see it in words like French. You have the word petit for small, or you have Spanish chico for small, or grand for large. So the same tendency seems to persist across languages. And linguists believe this has to do with the pitch of the vowels. So if you think about the kind of sounds a little animal makes and a big animal makes, a little bird, they make little high-pitched tweets. You know, they have a very small vocal cavity and they're making high-pitched sounds. Little high-frequency sound waves fit in these small cavities. So birds make little high-pitched tweets. Whereas your lions, your big animals, your elephants, they're going to make they're big animals with a big resonating cavities. They're going to make low-pitched sounds. So it's very natural to think about high-pitched sounds as indicating small things and low-pitched sounds indicating big things. And it turns out that these front vowels, this I and e and e, have a particular kind of high-pitched sound. We call it in linguistics the second formant. It's a resonance that's particularly high-pitched. And the back vowels have a low-pitched resonance. And so instinctively somehow, no matter what language we speak, we seem to associate these kind of vowels with this kind of pattern. So that led us to look at whether this is true in food as well. So research had suggested that maybe ice cream names that had back vowels, oohs and ahs, might make a better name for an ice cream because we'd like ice creams to be big and round and solid and heavy. And so I looked at ice cream names and I looked at cracker names. And sure enough, names of crackers in the United States all had I vowels. So cracker brands in the United States have names like Ritz and Wheat Thins and Triscuit and even Chicken in a Biscuit and Cheese Its. They all have I's and E's. And ice cream flavor names all seem to have ahs. We had Chocolate and Rocky Road and Jamocha Almond Fudge. So whether or not the advertiser doing this on purpose or it's completely instinctive, or maybe a mixture of both, depending on the advertiser, it seems like just from the name of the food, we can tell something about the light, small crispiness of crackers from those front vowels and the heavy richness of ice cream from those back vowels.
What could we tell about the kind of root that's in shabbat and sherbet? And so what could we tell about that word that makes it so durable for that concept of something like slightly treatish, I suppose?
Oh, that's a good question. It's not clear. The word originally comes from an Arabic word meaning drink. And so the roots of the word are the history is right there in the word. We can see the etymology in the word. It's accessible to any speaker of Arabic or Persian. But the sound of the word, it's hard to know. So maybe a sherbet, it's a front vowel. So maybe it's It's small. On the other hand, the word sorbet, which has the same root, has an ah vowel in it, which is a back vowel. So if you think about it, sound symbolism really can't be everything that's going on in meaning. After all, there's only a small number of sounds, and language has a huge, potentially infinite number of possible meanings. So really, sound symbolism can tell you something about big versus small, or maybe smooth things versus not smooth things, but it's really only a small part of the kind of meanings that we have.
You were saying it's not quite clear how much of a brand name is created through volition and experiment, and how much is just somebody's got a good feeling that works. But I wonder if these companies are working out the best name for a brand name, who's doing that within the company if it's not you or your colleagues? You know, how does that happen within a company?
Well, I think to some extent it is linguists. So I've talked to some advertising agencies and branding companies, and branding companies do in fact hire linguists, and they spend a lot of time thinking about the linguistic properties of sounds, what kind of things are symbolized by different vowels and different consonants. So I think in the modern day, advertising agencies spend a lot of time thinking about this. And it's not just a modern thing. If you look at the history of advertising, David Ogilvy, the founder of one of the most famous advertising agencies sort of the inspiration for the TV show Mad Men, he talks about the use of language as being very important in advertising. He says, you know, if you find yourself saying the same thing one day, I forget how he said it, to a trapezist and a nun, then you're probably selling your product wrong. You have to really consider who you're talking to and think about the words you're using. Linguist comes from lingua, language, which also it means tongue. So just like in English, you can say, you know, use the word tongue to mean a different language, a different tongue. This metaphor seems to be true in other languages as well. Linguist, we live by our tongues.
Dan Jurafsky there, and he's the author of The Language of Food, A Linguist Reads the Menu. And don't forget, if you'd like to hear all our programmes with Dan Jurafsky, or indeed round about 1,000 other Culture Files, you can find us on the Classic Drive page of the Lyrics site, as well as at culturefilepod.tumblr.com and on SoundCloud. And you can get links to our latest podcast each weekday by following us on Twitter. That's @culturefilepod.